This podcast is a Modahub Media production.
Welcome to another episode of Let's Get Real Now, where we discuss everything related to real life issues and self-improvement in a not so boring way. Make sure to leave us a review as well as subscribe on your favorite platform and join our VIP list through the link in this episode's description so you do not miss new episodes. Also, consider following us on social media and also leaving us your questions or comments as a DM or a voice note with our voice note tool to get them featured and answered in future episodes. Hi, you're welcome to another guest episode on the Let's Get Real Now podcast. My guest on this episode is Mari Mosley. After growing up in one of the toughest neighborhoods in the US, the South Bronx, New York, and becoming a mother at 14, she went on to pursue multiple degrees centered around psychology and mental health. After successfully leaving a 25-year-long abusive and toxic relationship, Marie is now on a mission to spread the word to other women who may be in these circumstances and to help them find and create a new path for themselves on the other side of this experience. I'll be back with Mari after this quick break. Thank you so much for joining me, Ms. Mosley. It's really an honor to have you on the show, truly. When I read your bio, your story, and it just, I knew that I will have a lot to learn from it. And I also knew that my audience, you know, will have a lot to learn from it. It's such a packed story. And getting to talk with you now, I know that this is going to be a really, really fun, insightful conversation. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah. So you grew up in the Bronx, south of the Bronx. What was it like growing up in a neighborhood such as that? During the time when you were growing up?
Yes. So I grew up in New York City in the South Bronx. Yeah. And it during the time we moved there, we lived there during the where it was one of the worst places in the country to live. Oh. And it was drug infested during the crack era. Oh. And stuff that, so those are my years there. And we lived in what you call the projects.
Yeah.
Where it's like lower income housing. And the people that are on like public assistance and stuff like that, you know, people to get assistance from the government, you know, pretty much a poor neighborhood.
Wow.
So we were a little fortunate.
A quick question about the living situation. Do you feel like that segregation of people that receive help from the government, like even giving it a name, calling it the projects and things like that, do you feel like it had an effect on the way people looked at people that lived in those places?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Where we lived, they would call it the ghetto, the hood. You know, if you heard those sort of terms, that's the type of place where, and it was predominantly Black. We didn't have any Black and Hispanic, I should say. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any white people that lived in our building. The only white people we saw were our teachers.
Wow.
They came to our neighborhood from their neighborhoods to teach.
Wow.
But definitely is frowned upon. It's talked about very negatively, even to today.
Yeah.
You know, you hear a lot about the violence that goes on there. You know, it's pretty much poverty, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like if they weren't the segregation wasn't so obvious, like even giving it a name and making it the difference seem so vast, like maybe they could have had better chances, people that live there, if the segregation wasn't so much?
I definitely do feel that for anybody, you know, when you're classified or labeled You know, at some point in time, those, you become kind of a product of your environment, you know, because you, it's obvious. It's not anything that's subtle. Yeah. It's an obvious situation that there's a difference between, you know, where you live or what type of funds your parents make, you know, whether they're getting their funds from the government or some type of low paying job, different things like that. So it definitely makes an impact on how people begin to view themselves.
Yeah, definitely. Do you feel like growing up there had an impact on the way you viewed yourself? Like, did you feel like it affected you, you know, growing up with that mindset and that stigmatization?
You know what? As far as I'm concerned, for me, my mindset was one way, but it was a lot. My behavior was different. Mm. So I kind of, my behavior started to adapt to what my surroundings were. Because we didn't come from there. I had my dad, my mom. We lived in a neighborhood. We still lived in what you would consider the South Bronx.
Yeah.
But we were just in a different type of environment. Like we were more where families lived. And, you know, when there's a breakdown of the family for whatever reason, that's very impactful as well. Yeah. So, you know, after my dad died and we had a fire, that's how we ended up in the projects. Yeah. So now you have a situation with a single mom with six kids. And so we had to conform basically to survive there, you know, and that's in the form of having to defend yourself, you know, every other day and with fighting and different stuff that took place there. So it definitely changed my behavior, you know, and I felt like I needed to change my behavior in order to be able to, you know, survive and go back and forth and defend myself. And because when you come to that place and people have already formulated relationships and cliques and stuff, they give you the treatment of what you call the new kid on the block. Mm-hmm. So you have to basically prove yourself, you know?
Yes.
But yeah, it definitely changed my behavior.
Okay. Well, I definitely understand what you mean by that. Then you became a mother at the age of 14. How did that happen? How did you deal with that period in your life?
My sister passed away when I was just turning 12 or 13, just before, like 6 days after my birthday.
Wow.
My niece passed away first. And then 2 months after that, my sister passed away. Wow. About maybe a week before I was going to middle school. So I went into middle school traumatized, broken, you know, confused, frustrated, angry. Mm-hmm. And I went against my better judgment and I dealt with a person that I really didn't like for a plethora of reasons. I didn't like this person, his behavior and stuff. But at some point I started to let my guards down and we became cool. We started to hang out with each other, talk to each other. And then, and let me just say this, I take complete responsibilities for my actions because at that age, I still knew better. I didn't know better because of the way I was raised, I knew better.
Yeah.
But I ended up succumbing to peer pressure. And the first time that we had sex, I got pregnant with my daughter.
Wow.
And because of the way I was raised, I wasn't willing to abort the child. Mm-hmm. I decided that, you know, I had to be responsible. I honestly didn't think about my age. Me and my sister came up with a plan. Once I had a plan, I was good to go. I was going to move forward. It was a bit scary, but I did have a really good support system.
Wow.
It was a little bit scary only because of who I was having this baby with, you know, the person I was having this baby with. But as far as my sister and my mom, you know, supporting me through it and just saying they were going to make a way for me to be able to continue school and stuff like that. That was helpful. You know, that was what kept me going. And it wasn't easy. It was not easy. You know, I know that it looked it, but it wasn't for me.
Yeah, definitely. It's not a situation that will be easier for someone, even an adult. And it must have been really scary. Like, just the fear of the unknown and, you know, what's coming on a whole new level of life must have been on a whole different level. So it's a great thing that your family was definitely there to support. Was this this experience, was it the beginning of the 25-year abusive relationship that you then experienced, that you got into? Or was that a whole nother thing?
Yes, that was the beginning. First, I got a little, because I was talking about this the other day, I got a little bit of shoving while I was pregnant, just a little bit of shoving. Wow. But nothing violent, you know, nothing violent. But 2 months after I had my daughter, I was walking around with two black eyes. Mm. And that's where the abuse began.
I'm just correct, you were probably about 15 now.
No, my daughter was born when I was 14 years old. She was born 13 days after my 14th birthday.
Wow, so you were 14 and you were already getting abused?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And you know, even in writing my book, even in discussing it, I have three older brothers. And you know, when I was a young girl, my brothers protected me. When we moved to the projects, they'd have to come outside and fight for me sometimes and protect me from older boys and different things like that. Mm. As I was writing my book, it was still very confusing after all these years as to why I just didn't say something, you know, why I didn't tell somebody that this stuff was happening to me.
Yeah.
And the only answer that I came up with was I grew up without a father.
Oh.
And so I didn't want that for my daughter. I mean, I missed my father. I still miss my father all these years later.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not want it for my daughter. So I hid things. I pretending things were okay. I wouldn't speak up because I felt like if I did, some type of event was going to take place to separate him from my daughter. I didn't want that for her. So I kind of just, you know, sucked it up and took what was going on in order to keep her with some semblance of a real family with her mother and father around.
Wow. That was definitely a self-sacrificial decision to make, considering how young you were then and the whole circumstance. And you endured this for 25 years. What's made you have the courage after 25 years to be able to leave that situation, to be able to say, you know what, I'm done with this, and, you know, to step out on your own? What gave you that push?
When somebody reads my book, they're going to see that the relationship was toxic. But after a few years, I mean, I think probably when I was about 16 or 17,
yeah,
I started to fight back. So it was kind of abusive on both of our parts at that point.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to keep being slapped and punched and the other type, you know, all these other things that he was doing to me. So I started to fight back. It's just that it created a very toxic environment emotionally, psychologically damaging and abusive. To answer your question, I had a lot of times where I decided, like, you know, I had enough. I don't want to do this anymore. And I find him coming back, and he'd come back with gifts and you know, sorry, and let's go on this trip. I want, you know, I apologize for whatever he did, you know.
Yeah.
But my final straw was, he had always had infidelity. He has a daughter that's 2 months younger than my daughter.
Wow.
So my daughter was born in July. This young lady was born in September. So there was infidelity on his part from the beginning to the end, right? Mm-hmm. I also had an infidelity, but I had an infidelity with one person for a while.
Yeah.
But my problem is when we got to the place where, and then there's a point where I start, where I give my life to the Lord.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying to make this work. I'm really trying to be honorable. I'm trying to respect God's covenant of marriage.
Yeah.
And I'm in as a byproduct, I'm respecting him and I'm doing everything that I have to do as a wife. But that's when he kind of really amped things up and made my life a living hell. And what really got me to my breaking point was, because he was a truck driver and he would come home every like 6 weeks, every 6 to 8 weeks, because he was stayed on the road. But every time he came home, I ended up in the at my doctor's office with itching and burning. It did not turn out to be like an STD, but it was yeast infection.
Wow.
And I couldn't understand. It didn't make any sense. And I didn't understand the science behind what was taking place. So I go to the doctor. But when I go to the doctor, I was also asking for a blood test.
Oh, okay.
So on the third time that I did this, my doctor was like, okay, what is the problem? What's going on? I need you to talk to me about these yeast infections and these constant, like every 2-3 months you come in here for blood tests. What's going on? So I explained it to her. I said, you know, every time that I'm with him, this is what happens to me. And I'm like terrified. I don't know if it's an STD. I don't know what it is. And if you say it's a yeast infection, we clear it up and then it's right back. So she explained, and I said, and I know that men can't have yeast infections. I know that much. So she explained to me that men can carry the bacteria on them if they're having unprotected sex with another female that might have, because some women's body, every woman's body is different.
Yeah.
Some people are prone to recurring yeast infections.
Yeah.
And so when she explained that to me, what stuck in my mind was unprotected sex. Unprotected sex.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't know, you know, it kind of lit a fire in me that, because I got really angry. I got angry at the fact that this could have possibly been something else.
Able to decide for yourself that you were going to get out of that relationship that was equally toxic, and you were able to make the move and then better yourself and come out on the other end of it, even a better person. What do you have to say to women who are in this same situation, who are in such toxic relationships, mm-hmm. but who stay there for one reason or the other? Some may be because people, you know, will laugh at them if they leave, saying they didn't try enough, or some of them are just scared of, you know, the unknown that comes after leaving such a relationship. What do you have to say to them?
First, I want to say that I do understand. I completely understand, because I myself had several excuses as to why I was staying in that relationship. What I want women to know is it really does chip away at who you are. It can leave you a shell of a woman. The journey back to yourself, because that's really what happens, is you lose yourself in those relationships. When you come out, you have no idea who you even are and what is your identity. So, you know, it's a long journey, but the journey is worth it. It's worth it. And I want women to know that regardless of what they go through, they do not lose their value. They're still important. You know, they still are contributors to society. And to And they, it is really going to take courage. It's going to take courage to make that move. But in the, at the end of it, it will be well worth it when you find yourself whole, you know, when you find yourself healed and you recover for the, from those type of relationships. So it's worth the, it's worth being alone for a little while sometimes. You know, sometimes it's okay to be alone, to work on yourself and to figure out who you are after all of this, you know, after whatever type of toxicity that you go to, go through. And I don't really feel like any human being is supposed to go to those, go through those things, abuse and mental abuse and all of that, but it happens. But women in particular, our psyches are a little more delicate than men's are. Cause we're emotional beings. We're a little softer, you know. So that stuff can be very, very damaging to us. And trust me, any woman that's out there going through it, I completely understand all of it. I don't try to act like it's such an easy thing to leave a situation, especially if you've been in it for a long time, and you kind of normalize it. It's not normal, and it's okay, you know. And as far as the shame and the embarrassment, it took me years to write my book because of shame and embarrassment. I didn't want people to know what I've gone through, but it is a lot of women. Women are not alone. They have a whole sisterhood of women that have been through this type of, you know, in a toxic relationship. And so that whole feeling of being alone and ashamed and embarrassed, it's an illusion. It really is an illusion. It's not the truth, because there's a lot of us out here that have been through it. A lot of us have come through it, you know, but there's so many of us that didn't make it. And so, you know, that's the purpose of my book, so that I can help those that can still make it, you know. So I don't want women to be ashamed and embarrassed. You know, it's life and stuff happens, and it happens to people in different ways. Everybody has something that they, you know, don't feel good about. But that shouldn't hold them back from.
You know, I mean, it's not an easy situation, and, you know, it shouldn't be made to look easy. But, you know, once we find the person finds the courage to just. Mm-mm. Know that on the other side, you can always come out better. Just the first step is usually harder, I guess. But just getting the confidence, courage to take that first step is just what was necessary. For you, what would you say helped you to be able to move on and not let the trauma of this past relationship, of this past situation, affect your new life and your new relationship?
First, I want to say something about, you said that the first step is the hardest. There's this quote that says, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step, you know? And I think that if women just continue to walk it forward, right, keep taking steps, even baby steps. If you have to crawl, then crawl, you know what I mean? But we have to find our way out of those relationships. Even if it's a crawl, just start going toward what frees you from that relationship. And then to answer your question, for me, I really do believe that my children, right, my children, I was the caregiver for my mom, so it wasn't good for my mom to be living in the house with all kinds, because she had health issues, heart issues. So it wasn't that type of stress, you know, wasn't really good for her living with us and going through all of that, the arguments, the fights and all of that. So my children and my mom, right? Definitely God helped me so much, tremendously, to help me have peace and to help me figure out what I needed to do. But a big piece of it was that I went to school. So, and I know a lot of women that go through this stuff might not have gone to, like, gone to college. I don't know, you know, wherever they find themselves, but my degrees are all based in mental health, counseling, psychology, human behavior. So I was able, you understand? So I was submerged in the information. Yeah, I was submerged in the information needed to help guide me to come out. And not only that, I did a lot of relationship courses, you know. And so I knew that I shouldn't bring my baggage into my new marriage. I knew, you know, that I shouldn't make my husband pay for something that another man did. And different, you know, so different little pockets of information I was able to utilize to help me, you know, to help me. I didn't just go to school for everybody else. When I was going to school, I was going to school for my own mental health as well. You know, those textbooks and, you know, them textbooks were expensive, but they were worth it because I gained so much information on how to help myself, how to help my children, different stuff, you know. So, it, you know, and I know many women don't have that, but even if they go to counseling or it's so many things that can help them find peace and find strength, you know. And I pray a lot. Back then I prayed a lot and I still pray a lot because my connection with God is a lot, is a whole lot of what the healing process that I had to go through. You know, it was a lot of tears, a lot of crying, but, you know, as long as I was able to take it to God and get some help and some guidance on what I needed to do with my life, next steps, stuff. So people have to find out what works for them. You know, I tell people what worked for me, but everybody legitimately has to find out what works for them and then work it and keep working it until you get the results that you want. Because this is not an overnight, thing, you know, when you're coming out of a relationship like that, you don't find yourself well overnight, but you just have to keep working it. And I'm very big on taking some time off. You know, I have so many women say, well, how much time should I be by myself? However long it takes. You have to be healthy in order to be a part of a healthy relationship.
Right. Can you ask, because some of them, they come from societies where if they feel they are on their own for too long, they start, you know, ridiculing them and saying, oh, you left the relationship and now you're all by yourself, blah, blah. You know, all those kinds of really talking down on their side. Do you feel like society too really plays a role in how they are able to get away from these situations and then work on themselves before getting to something better?
I definitely believe that society has changed a lot over the years, right? So, because it's really a short, like 20, 30 years ago that they started to have the domestic violence laws. You know, well, I'm here in America, I'm talking about, right? They just read, like, it's just a short 30 some years ago where they made these laws and then rape became a issue, you know. So I feel like society has made a few strides in helping women be able to go and find help. But I also still do agree with you that it kind of shuns women, you know, like for instance, women that stay in. For me, my biggest question has been, well, why did you stay so long? Like, you could have got out. Why, you know, and people can't understand it until you're in it. You don't. And so I don't. One thing I've learned is I don't listen to people when they were like, oh, because I would have done this. And you don't know what you'll do until you're walking in those shoes. It's very easy to say that stuff on the outside, on the outside looking in and saying, oh, I would have done this. I wouldn't have taken that. And I would have been gone. But it's not that easy. It's not that easy for women that don't have, that have children attached to the relationship. It's not easy for women. There's some women whose husbands are the breadwinners. And they don't want to, you know, how am I going to survive without this person? So, you know, I don't like to judge people's situations because people do what they have to do to survive sometimes. But I do feel like society doesn't help sometimes when you treat them like that and you make it difficult for them to leave. And it, you use the word earlier, and I use the same word, courage, right? We should be rooting these women on because they had the courage to do something that was hard.
Yeah.
They had the courage. That's actually standing up for yourself. You know, you're finally standing up for yourself and saying, I don't deserve this. I don't want this. This isn't good for me. We should be cheering them on and rooting them on and supporting them through it rather than making life more difficult and making them feel embarrassed for people to know. I don't want to, you know, go look for help. I don't want my family to know. I don't, you know, so many women suffer in silence because they're so afraid of what people are going to say and think about them.
Thank you for sharing these insights.
Yeah.
Now, just one last quick question. Tell me a little bit about your book, Pretty Divorce. You know, what it's about, what you're hoping to share with people through the book, and when it's going to be out.
Okay, so it's called Pretty Divorce, How to Sever a Toxic Union and Create an Illuminated Future. So basically, it's my story. I tell some stories from my past and from my journey to help women see that, one, they are not alone, and that, two, you can come out of a relationship. You can be in a healthy relationship. You can actually create whatever future you want for yourself, you know, but whether it's going to college, whether it's starting a business, you know, whether it's writing a book like I did, you know. And so I'm just trying to give women some hope, you know, or at least a blueprint, you know what I mean? Like a formula to say, someone else has been there and, you know, she made it out. I know I can make it out. I'm going to, you know, do whatever I have to do to get out of these situations, you know. And the book is available on theprettydivorce.com. And yeah, it's, you know, it's out. It's actually, I got my first book, my proof. And I'll be mailing books out as early as tomorrow. So, you know, it's been on pre-order for a little while. And, but those that order it, if someone orders it today, they're going to have it in their hands by next week. It's no more, you know, it's no longer going to be a wait for it. But yeah, so I'm just hoping that it will inspire someone, help someone, you know, guide someone, you know, and make someone not feel alone and understand that every time I come across a woman, it's like, yeah, I was in a toxic relationship, or yeah, I went through a horrible divorce. So women are not as alone as they think they are. It just feels alone. Another illusion. It's quite a few women out here that's been through it or been through a toxic relationship. So just want to help.
Thank you so much for sharing
anybody
your experience. Like people like you who actually have the confidence and the courage to, you know, push through those situations and come out and share their experiences are the people that make it easier for other people to say. It's always easy, you know, when you are able to point to someone and say, oh, this person did it, then I can. Unlike when you're in a scenario where you feel like you're all alone and you're looking for at least some sort of guidance or someone who has even attempted it before and you can't see anyone, that's, you know, it just gives the person a feeling of hopelessness, and people like you actually take that away. So thank you for sharing your experience, your story, and it's really been great chatting with you on the episode. And I know your book too is also going to be amazing. I really do hope people check it out, because at the end of the day, like you said, it's an illusion. And I feel like it's due to the fact that most people don't have the courage to step out and share. So every other person sees that, look, it's not such a strange thing that I'm going through, and there's tons of other people that is going through it as well.
Yep. But I appreciate you having me on. It's been amazing. I don't care, you know, how many times it was good. I really do appreciate you. And I'm praying that your podcast blows up and takes over. Yes, thank you, though.
Thank you for listening to this episode, and I hope you enjoyed my chat with Mari. If you'd like to connect with Mari or get the Pretty Divorce book, then check the links in this episode's description for links to the website and links to connect with Mari personally. Thank you guys, and that's it for this episode of the Let's Get Real Now podcast.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please make sure to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review on your favorite platforms. Also follow the show on social media and join our VIP list so you do not miss new episodes. All the links are available in this episode's description. Thank you.